Response is, there's four FTE.
Good afternoon. Today is March 23rd, 2017. We will open today's subcommittee on public safety and continue and actually begin public testimony on House Bill 5004. Before we get into the public testimony, the department is going to finish the presentation that they were given yesterday, actually all week. Given that we will see you guys again, I highly encourage you to be as quick as possible in that presentation. And we have to keep in mind for everybody up here, we have about a dozen or so people signed up. So we should, we might want to email questions and reserve most of our questions if we can. Senator Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to apologize to folks who come to testify publicly. I'm very eager to hear what you have to say, but I had a kind of big bill passed today and I've got a bunch of press stuff. So thank you very much, Commissioner Hall. You were a big help for that. Commissioner Hall gets a big shout out from me. So I apologize for leaving, and I will go back and listen to the testimony. It's not because I don't care. So thanks.
All right.
Do I have to give an exit strategy too?
Good, Senator. I think everyone just trusts pretty much 99.999% of what you do.
But if you see me leaving early, it's because I've been called up to another meeting. Thank you.
That time of year.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Take it away.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colette Peters. I'm the Director of the Department of Corrections, and we are happy to move this presentation along. I will turn it over to Assistant Director Daryl Borrello, but let you know quickly that this is an individual with a great lot of public safety experience. He has 26 years of experience in public safety, having started his career in 1990 as a police officer in Central California. He came to the Department of Corrections in 2003 as a correctional officer, and shortly after that joined the Special Investigations Unit, ultimately working for me when I was then the Inspector General. Daryl has spent 4 years as the Human Resources, in the Human Resources Division, and in 2015 was promoted as Assistant Director of the division you are about to hear. So with that, I will turn it over to Assistant Director Borrello. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Winter, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee. I'm Daryl Borrello, Assistant Director of the Administrative Services for the Oregon Department of Corrections. And I am going to cut this short, and then I'll leave time for as many questions as you'd like. But I want to then go into highlighting a few of the changes that we've made that we're very proud of. And first of all, the Administrative Services Division is a new division within the agency. We made an organizational change in late 2015 to align with other organizations to provide essential support services and keep our institutions operating safely. This restructure aligns with our top initiatives and breakthroughs, and so I want to just run through those changes briefly. The division was formerly the General Services Division, and we changed that to Administrative Services. In doing so, we moved the Human Resources Division within the Administrative Services Division and pulled over Diversity and Inclusion Office into Human Resources. We then moved the financial services section out of general services and into the office of chief financial officer. So if I've thoroughly confused you, my division, administrative services, captures these specific units: human resources and diversity and inclusion, distribution services, which is our warehouse and distribution and commissary, facility services and sustainability, and information technology. As we go to the next slide, the Administrative Services Division is 3.8% of the agency's total fund budget at approximately $66.5 million and 3.5% of the agency's general fund budget at $58.4 million. On this slide, we're looking at the division's FTE in comparison to the rest of the agency. The division has 248 FTE. The majority of these individuals work within Human Resources Division and Distribution Services, and they are spread out throughout the state and within our 14 institution locations. And although this division only makes up 5.3% of the agency's FTE, we provide support services to approximately 4,600 employees and coordinate the maintenance of approximately 250 DOC buildings. A few of the major budget drivers within our division are, of course, staff salaries and benefits, deferred maintenance costs, emergencies for unexpected system failures and severe weather, aging critical infrastructure, fluctuating utility and transportation costs, and the training and certification cost of our employees. And then rather than break it out into each of these units as we had planned, what I would like to do is skip forward to sustainability and some of the efforts and accomplishments that we have made within that area. The department has immersed itself in sustainability efforts, from serious recycling, which saves money and conserves resources, to helping protect endangered species. Adults in custody and staff are finding ways to give back. Pictured here are female adults in custody at Coffee Creek inspecting hives for the beekeeping program. Again, females at Coffee Creek at the Oregon Zoo Butterfly Lab. These adults in custody grow nectar plants to feed endangered Oregon silver spot butterflies for the zoo habitat restoration. They're also seen at Basket Slough, where adults in custody are planting lupine. And that last picture is inmates planting sagebrush at a plantation plot near Vail, Oregon, to help the Corvallis-based Institute of Applied Ecology save the sage grouse, which is at risk of being put on the endangered species list. We've established green teams in not only all of our institutions, but in every DOC office location. And recently, the Oregon Sustainability Board has approved our 2016 Sustainability Plan. 2014 to 2015, we saw a 97% increase in green janitorial purchases throughout our agency. And lastly, each year, the Straub Environmental Center and the Marion County Environmental Services Office partner to present the Mid-Valley Green Awards. And I'm very happy to say that in 2016, our agency received the Recycler of the Year. So again, we're very proud of those accomplishments within sustainability. And then I'll go to the last slide. And then in closing, and then I'll take any questions because I know we skipped quite a bit. This is an incredible group of state employees. As I mentioned, 248 conduct all the services that I mentioned within those different sections. The business and mission of the Department of Corrections is only accomplished because of this small group of employees who provide critical support. I'm honored to be the Assistant Director of Administrative Services, and I will answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions?
I just have one. Yes. Is it possible that the work that's been done with beekeeping and some of the other work that's been done, that it can actually lead to employment when the individual is outside of the facility? And or is there a nexus to further education?
Co-chair Winters and members of the committee, I happily answer that yes and yes. So I will start that with a success story that at our warehouse center about a year and a half ago, we had an adult in custody that worked as an orderly in our warehouse and just did a phenomenal job. And upon transitioning into post-prison supervision, became a temp employee for us at the warehouse. And I'm happy to announce that as of today, he's a permanent state employee at the CDC warehouse. I can give similar stories with the floral program up at Coffee Creek and many others.
I guess I'm really interested in, particularly with talking green space and some of the, and whether there are some opportunities. You know, I know that at one time I talked to one of my constituents here who was very, has been very much involved with a DOC in some of the everything from learning how to do sprays and what have you, yes. And which those are pretty much, if you really, they're not just talking about traditional landscaping. There, it right. is a craft and a skill that has, you know, some very high paying jobs. And so I just wondered if that, when we talk about beekeeping, when we talk about pollination, and when we talk about some of the things that you had on screen, whether there is the opportunity to actually yes. build a skill.
Co-chair Winters, members of the committee, yes, I would answer that yes also. And what I would be willing to do is I can go back and get many of these programs when the adults in custody work in them for a certain amount of time or go through a certain amount of training, they're actually issued a certificate. And so I can see which of these green jobs and training opportunities that they have offer those certificates.
Any other questions? Director Peters, is there anything else you wanted to add?
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, I would just like to say thank you for your attentiveness this week, for spending 4 days with us. We appreciate it very much. And then I'd also like to thank all the individuals in this room today. I really appreciate seeing this level of support for the Department of Corrections. And you have all heard me say in the past, and I will say it again and again, the positive benefit of 3194 and the coming together of the public safety system has been very profound. We're not going to agree on everything, but I will tell you the level of collaboration and communication and support that occurs inside Oregon's public safety system today is something you should all be very proud of. So I look forward to hearing public testimony, and thank you for your time.
Excellent. It was a pleasure to have you. We look forward to next time around.
Great. Thank
for
you.
For those who are watching or listening, just to let you know, the rest of this presentation is listed on OLIS under the March 20th date, the day we started the series of presentations. And then also we do have answers. We've been asking all kinds of questions all week, so the department has provided answers that are now posted on OLIS. So on that note, we're going to move on to public testimony. And I do have one individual who, you know, we wanted to make sure we got up here so he can get out of here. And then after that, I'm going to attempt to go through those that I think are elected officials. I don't, not everybody marked that, so I'll do the ones that I know and then go down the order that you signed up. So first up, we'll go ahead and hear from Roger Martin.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I'm the lobbyist for the Oregon Catholic Conference. We're here to support the Department of Corrections. Director Peters was able to meet with the Archbishop last year. It was a very positive meeting, and we want to do whatever we can to support. I'm going to be very brief. I've spent, since you last met in session to pass a budget, dozens of hours at the Oregon State Penitentiary, and I would be remiss to say that we have a perfect system, but it's not her problem. It's a problem created by the legislature, and I was a member of this legislature years ago. We've compounded a system that we would not be proud to call progressive in a state where we are proud of being progressive in many things. I want you to go ahead and do what you can to support this, but I hope we all work for change. And you're not hearing House Bill 5005, which is the Justice Reinvestment, but that's an important factor in this. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Next up, we will have Judge Waller and Commissioner Hall.
You know, actually, I will wait until David then.
We can go together.
How
about this? Commissioner Hall, why don't you go ahead and go since you're standing and she's asking to wait, and then we will proceed with the two of you.
All righty.
Thanks so much, co-chairs and members of the subcommittee. For the record, my name is Bill Hall. I'm a Lincoln County Commissioner and also President of the Association of Oregon Counties. I would like to start by thanking Director Peters for her leadership at the department. We are privileged to have a strong working relationship with her and her staff. particularly, we would like to extend our appreciation to Assistant Director Stromberg. His work with our local community corrections directors has been a key model for state and county partnerships. I know that we would not be able to successfully carry out our local supervision programs without the support of these two individuals, as well as many other staff that work to keep our communities safe. Counties stand by the DOC in their initiatives and budget needs. We realize these are very tough budget times, but we're asking you as legislators to protect our public safety system, including DOC. We are concerned about proposed cuts to community corrections, as this grant and aid funding to counties is the core of our community supervision needs. With these funds, we keep offenders accountable while making sure they're receiving effective treatment, reentry, and recidivism reduction programs. Grant and aid funding in cooperation with Justice Reinvestment Grant funding has helped us avoid building a new prison while allowing counties to continue carrying out these successful programs. In addition to community corrections and justice reinvestment programs, we have many counties that are working to assist the department in maintaining below the women's prison population threshold needed to open additional prison wings. I would like to recognize Marion and Lane counties for entering into work release program agreements with DOC, as well as Jackson and Multnomah, who are also in conversations with the department. Finally, I would like to mention my presidential initiative for this year at AOC. The Stepping Up Initiative is a national effort between the National Association of Counties, American Psychiatric Association, and Council of State Governments to reduce the number of mentally ill individuals in our prisons and county jails. There are an estimated 2 million people with serious mental illnesses admitted to jails across the nation each year, with three-quarters of these adults also with drug and alcohol use problems. I hope you'll join me in recognizing this issue and urge our counties to step up their efforts, as many already have. 13 Oregon counties have passed a Stepping Up resolution in the past year, and I hope to have all 36 on board by the end of the year. This is another effort that will take all of us working together, from our local county level to you state policymakers to our friends in Washington, D.C. Thank you for this opportunity. We look forward to continuing our work with DOC. Again, I thank Director Peters for her ongoing commitment to our counties. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions for the Commissioner? All right.
Thanks.
And now we'll go for Judge Waller. And who are you bringing up with you?
David.
All right. So whichever order you desire to go in.
He's going first.
All right. Thank you for hearing me today. I appreciate it. My name is David Van Spaybrook. I'm a civil trial attorney at the law firm of Sussman Shank. I'm the volunteer chair of the Multnomah County Justice Reinvestment Steering Committee. This is the policy committee that formulated Multnomah County's response to 3194. This committee is an unprecedented collaboration between judges, law enforcement, prosecutors, defense attorneys, the probation department, and treatment providers. These groups, working collaboratively together, developed the Multnomah County Justice Reinvestment Program. The acronym for that is McJRP, and that's what I'll refer to it as. I'm here to request that Justice Reinvestment receive full funding. I got involved in Justice Reinvestment as a private citizen because I visited a client many times on a civil matter who was in a correctional facility, and I was struck by the huge expense of prisons and the lives wasted inside. I saw a huge expense and a not very good result, high recidivism. As a business person, I saw sort of a revolving door in downtown Portland as well of aggressive street people who disappeared for a little while and then reemerged no better. It's the definition of insanity to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result, but that is what we did before 3194. The McJRP program has been operational for 2 years. We were committed to finding a way to make sentencing more informed so that prison usage was more efficient. We took certain classes of crimes, such as property crimes, drug use crimes, low-level assault, and made them eligible for the McJerp program. The program does not apply to sex crimes, domestic violence, or murder. People arrested for eligible crimes can opt into the McJerp program and receive an immediate LSCMI psychological evaluation that focuses on their criminality and risk. That evaluation, the LSCMI, is then used in a settlement conference with a judge and a prosecutor and a defense lawyer so that a more informed sentencing decision is made, which is more efficient. McJerp offenders are eligible for an enhanced probation program rather than prison, even though many of the offenses would have been presumptive prison prior to the program. The enhanced probation program typically lasts 120 days, and they then, in some cases, transition to a more traditional probation. The intensive probation program includes drug treatment, counseling on mental health, criminality, job training, and housing. We have graduation ceremonies, and they are quite moving. These are high-risk people with a lot of problems, and for many, the moment of graduation is the first time that they've had a job, been drug-free, and had a place to live. It's a chance for them to have a fresh start. The steering committee committed at the beginning to have all aspects of the program be data-driven, and we have a data team that monitors all aspects of the program and compares those results to a population of offenders that did not have the McJerp program. Because certain offenders are sentenced to enhanced probation instead of prison, the program has saved 32,014 prison day beds. In the last biennium, the state invested $8.1 million and avoided immediate prison operating costs of $14 million. The state avoided another $3.2 million in costs associated with increased use of short-term transitional leave by Multnomah County offenders. So as a result, total costs avoided were $17.2 million, resulting from an investment of $8.1 million. The program pays for itself. These numbers do not include avoiding the much greater cost of building a new prison. In addition, some of our offenders now pay state taxes when they otherwise would not. Our recidivism rate is 2% lower for McJerp participants than the comparison group. Now, that sounds like a statistical tie. It is not. And the reason it's not is because the offenders that are out under the McJerp program are more high-risk offenders. So we are actually getting a better result with a more troubled and troubling population. We have been spending too much on prisons. This program allows us to spend less and get a better result. I know you face difficult choices, but cutting the McJerp program will ultimately cost the state money and make your job even harder in future years.
Dave, I think the co-chair Winters.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't see.
That's okay. I'm kind of short. When you did the analysis before you started the program of whether or not you're going to do low, medium, or high risk, can you share with us how you came to the conclusion to do medium and high risk?
Sure. So what we did was we identified certain classes of crimes, and those crimes, we did not want this program to apply to really serious offenders, murder, rape, things like that. But we wanted this program to apply to offenders where we had the potential to have them not be in a facility and be out with an enhanced probation. And so the crimes that are in here, that are in our program, are primarily property crimes. They are low-level assault, think street people fighting, that sort of thing. They are drug use crimes. And our thought was that those offenders were people who had problems underlying their criminality that could be addressed in a better way through enhanced probation rather than being inside a prison.
Thank you.
But having said all of that, what we think we are getting with this program is a better result for less money. And frankly, we think that if the program is cut, that doesn't really cut state spending. It just shifts it to somewhere else because, unfortunately, this is a troubled population. It exists. They are going to consume state funds in one way or another. And the real question is not, can we keep them from consuming state funds, But can we have them consume state funds in a way that's efficient and effective to solving their problems and giving them new lives and hopefully turning them into taxpayers and happy, productive people and changing the way they're living their lives now? This is a cutting-edge program. It could be replicated in other parts of the state or even in other parts of the country. I am hopeful that the funding of it will continue. I think it is a good investment for the state, and I think ultimately it will free up more money in the long run for other programs like education. So that's what I had to say today. I appreciate you listening to me. I'm happy to take other questions, and I know Judge Waller may have some remarks.
Any questions? All right.
Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, good to see you all again. I want to thank all of you, and I want to thank the Colette Peters. Colette Peters has done a tremendous job in providing leadership both at the state level and then through the partnerships that she has at the local level. I want to thank you because justice reinvestment, the results have been great in Multnomah County and in other parts of the state. But what it has really done, and what I want you to be aware of, is that it has spawned continuing collaboration on many, many parts of the public safety system. I've told some of you that for the past 3.5 years, we have met every Friday at 7 a.m., all of the partners to the public safety system, because we are committed to doing better for the people in our community. The result is that we are not sending as many people to prison, so that we, you know, hopefully contributed to the not having to build a new prison. But what we are really concerned about is that we serve the people of our community well, that they have what they need, that if they we can safely keep them out of prison, all the better. What that has led to, beyond simply maintaining justice reinvestment and doing a tremendous job in terms of evaluation and keeping track of our data, is that we've then begun to drill down even deeper. We've looked at the issues about disparity and are now drilling down to make sure that things are not only are everyone who is coming into the program being given a chance, but that we're not doing anything that will increase disparity and, in fact, will lead to reductions of disparity. So that's underway right now. We have the same group of public safety partners have moved from justice reinvestment, while we are still very engaged with that, also to looking at other crimes, so possession of a controlled substance. Starting in April, we will, for most possession of a controlled substance, the district attorney's office will not be charging these as felonies, but will be charging them as misdemeanors. We'll be doing risk assessments across the board for all participants and then sorting people into the right slot. Those that have are high need, high risk, they should go to a treatment court where they will earn the possibility of having that misdemeanor dismissed. Those who are low risk, low need, we don't need much of a touch to them, and it's not a good use of resource, and so they will be on their way. So I want to thank you, because what you did in passing 3194 has given us the opportunity to work at the local level to continuing to look at how do we get better results for our community, how do we get better results for the people that we are serving, and how do we, in the end, create a more efficient, more cost-effective project. I urge all of you, when you have the time after the session is long over, if you're in Portland, to come to one of the milestone celebrations. Hearing from people who've previously been to prison and who are now for the first time back in contact with family, working, proud that they have completed something in their lives, is truly remarkable. And I go to a lot of graduation ceremonies, but I think that the justice reinvestment graduation ceremonies are some of the best, because it is affirmation that we've taken some of the very high-risk people, in answer to your question, Senator Winters, who otherwise would have been in prison. And if it works for that population, we can apply the same principles all the way down the road to safely keep people in the community, knowing that we will always have members of the community who, based upon what they've done, based upon their criminal history, we're glad that there is a Department of Corrections that is doing a good job in managing people who can't be in the community. But for those who can, that's what they deserve, and we are trying to give back to the community by having productive members of our community who've gone through our program. So thank you.
Thank you.
I testified in front of this committee and a joint committee at PCC Sylvania a number of weeks ago. There was a huge number of people there, and I got done, and I was walking out the back, and I had two people who had been in our program approach me and say that this program had changed their lives. It was very emotional. This is huge to the people that are in the program, and it's a valuable program. I appreciate your attention today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your work. All right, next up we have, let's see, so that I can split out the elected officials, Sheriff Myers. I'm gonna come on up. You're going to be all by your lonesome, and then I'll start going two by two down the list from there.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jason Myers. I'm the Marion County Sheriff. I'm here today testifying on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association and the Oregon Chiefs of Police Association, who are in support of the funding for the Department of Corrections. I'm going to talk specifically about community corrections funding and the vital, how vitally important it is to the local communities. About a month ago, I came in and spoke on behalf of the Criminal Justice Commission on JRI and the importance of JRI. Community corrections funding is like the foundation of what we do, and JRI is like the second floor. And without that funding, that foundational component of the supervision, sanctions, and services, we can't build out on that JRI portion to really work at cost containment, keeping prison beds down, and doing things in the local community. The funding of community corrections at the current service level is critically important, because if it's not funded at the current service level, it creates opt-out, which allows local communities to opt out, which in my opinion is one of the things that makes our system so successful in the state of Oregon, is we have local communities bought in to doing some of the most important work. And as a law enforcement official, I know this firsthand, that if we can change behavior, we make people's lives better, we make our community stronger, and we make our community safer. And this funding is as critical in a community as large as mine. It's probably even more critical in communities that are in fiscal distress, some of the southern counties, where there's not a lot of public safety funding. This funding helps operate jails and provide those sanctions and supervision services for folks that are in the community on probation and post-prison supervision. So, as you know, I've shared with a number of you, we have an array of programs in Marion County that are turning really good results, that are helping us to contain our use of prison, which in turn frees up money for other things. And I just can't emphasize how important this funding component is as that foundational piece. I know you have a lot of difficult decisions, but I ask that you look at this very closely and fund it at that current service level. Thank you very much.
Any questions for the sheriff? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have Shannon White and Scott Taylor. Go ahead, Shannon.
Go ahead. For the record, my name is Shannon White. I'm the Deputy Director at Partnership for Safety and Justice. Co-chairs and members of the committee, I'm testifying here in support of the Department of Corrections budget. We are Partnership for Safety and Justice is a statewide organization that advocates for policy, public safety policy solutions for both people convicted of crime and victims of crime. We are supportive of the DOC's budget, in particular because we support the leadership of Director Peters and her team, and have been really appreciative of the solutions they have helped to bring to public safety challenges that we've faced over the years. I think people are aware, it's already been talked about a lot today, the Department of Corrections was instrumental in helping to move and implement justice reinvestment. They have had to implement the short-term transition leave, which has been the most impactful sentencing reduction that there has been on justice reinvestment, and also have worked very hard to ensure successful implementation of the family sentencing alternative. So they are true public safety partners, doing more than just running our prisons. Also, we submitted testimony in writing earlier this week. We do want to be supportive of whatever can be done to create healthier situations for the workers inside the Department of Corrections. We know that Having healthy situations, including an ability not just to not work overtime, but to actually go on vacation, which people are not having the opportunity to do, is critical to creating a safe environment for everyone inside those facilities. But we want to be here today also to talk about, I think, I'm looking at all of you and know you've heard about this a lot, so I will be quick. But, you know, we are bringing a reform package, Partnership for Safety and Justice, this session around changing some of our sentencing laws for drug and property crimes, not because we wanted to do that this session. It was not on our agenda of things to do this year, but because there was a threat of opening a second prison for women. I think you all are well aware that that would cost the state $17.5 million a biennium. And during a budget cut crisis, a time when we know that people who are sentenced for drug and property crimes are better served by accountability and some treatment programming, we want to make sure that that is on the forefront of your minds as you consider the totality of the public safety budget, and hopefully can be supportive of ways in which we can bend the curve of corrections costs in terms of hard beds, so we can invest in things like justice reinvestment and the local community support that we need to do this public safety more effectively and efficiently. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Taylor.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Taylor, for the record. I'm the director of Multnomah County Department of Community Justice, which involves adult probation, parole, recog services, and juvenile probation and detention in Multnomah County. And I'm here today because you've heard a lot about 3194, and I want to kind of echo some of the comments that Sheriff Meyer made. First, I want to thank Director Peters, Jeremiah Stromberg, and Heidi Stewart. They work the most with us in the community and our transition and our ability to connect. And we all know that the ability to actually have a plan inside that is fulfilled outside is how we get the greatest success. And the research would continue to back, but that connection is what really makes a difference. So I've given you written testimony. I'm just screaming through it here. And I think that partnership we talk about is what is critical. The ability to work together, the ability to have both the state and the county engagement and investment in the program is what has made Senate Bill 1145 work from over 20 years ago when we first started it. And that co-agreement, that partnership really is what leverages things. So in Multnomah County, that averages about 6,200 people a day that are on supervision. And the governor's current budget would reduce our state funding by almost $7 million. This will have an immediate impact on our ability to affect supervision in the communities. If the budget triggers the opt-out feature, which allows counties to return responsibility for probation and the post-prison supervision to the state, and DOC, I would project the cost involved in that transition will be more than the amount saved in the budget reduction. The local engagement will be reduced, and thus the partnership will be at risk for those counties. I was the DOC Assistant Director of Community Corrections during the implementation of SB 1145, and I am confident the unintended and collateral costs of triggering the opt-out have not been factored into the net cost calculations. As an example, part of Senate Bill 1145, the local jails now house individuals who, prior to Senate Bill 1145, would have served less than a year in prison. There are currently close to 700 of those individuals daily in the county jails, whose costs would return directly to DOC to negotiate with each county for space and costs as a partnership phrase. Multnomah County has been a strong supporter of Senate Bill 1145, both in philosophy and dollars. Multnomah County currently contributes more to my department than the statewide 5%, $13 million statewide reduction proposed in the governor's budget. The ability to leverage that kind of local commitment and resource will be impacted as funding is reduced at the state level. The partnership is built on both direct and indirect contributions, and that would not be possible if either party begins to withdraw from the partnership. Oregon's community correction system is frequently noted as one of the best in the country, and the collaborative partnership is one of the main features of that. And I encourage you to consider that partnership that's going on, the contributions that we both make, both the Department of Corrections and the local public safety community. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for these two? All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Kiki Parker-Rose and Stan Gilbert.
Thank you. Co-Chair Winters and Stark and members of the committee, my name is Kiki Parker-Rose, and I'm the Community Corrections Director in Klamath County, Oregon. I'm honored today to be with Stan Gilbert, who is the CEO of Klamath Basin Behavioral Health. That's our community mental health program in Klamath County. Klamath County Community Corrections employs 38 and a half staff members that provide supervision, services, and sanctions to just over 1,000 felony offenders in Klamath County. I come before you today to let you know the importance of fully funding community corrections throughout Oregon. Community corrections supervision is the most cost-effective correctional approach to public safety. The average daily cost of supervising an offender in the community is $10.71, with incarceration being about $99.37. Full funding for community corrections allows Klamath County to maintain manageable caseloads. We use the latest research in employing supervision strategies, including the use of effective practices in community supervision, EPICS, which teaches probation and parole officers how to apply the principles of effective intervention. Over the last 2 years, our agency has been able to build programs and services that address every criminogenic risk factor. By working collaboratively with several community partners, we're able to maximize our local resources to provide services to this population. This decreases duplication of services and increases participation. We opened the Community Corrections Center, which is a one-stop shop where all services are co-located in the Community Corrections Center. We are able to provide, and I'll just provide you with a short list because I have provided written testimony. Alcohol and drug treatment, GED and credit recovery, Medicaid and OHP signup, mental health services, gender responsive programs, mentors, cognitive programming, women and adult victim services, sex offender treatment, domestic violence treatment, polygraph examinations, transitional housing. Our primary partner at the center has been KBBH. KBBH employees, therapists, and case managers are embedded in our agency, providing alcohol, drug, mental health, and medication management services. I will tell you that we do not have a waiting list for alcohol and drug treatment, mental health services. We are able to get same-day assessments and next-day treatment. Providing baseline funding allows communities local options. It provides the ability to be creative in addressing criminality in each of our own communities. In Klamath County, I'm sad to report, we have a very high rate of person-to-person crimes, as evidenced by the number of person-to-person offenders that we sent to prison in 2016. We have multi-generational criminality, which is apparent in the community and the people that we are sending for incarceration for person-to-person crimes. In an attempt to address this issue, we have created a position that works with all of our offenders and their children. This position conducts assessments to identify barriers and refer the family for services as those needs are identified. It is our belief this early intervention will divert these families out of child welfare, juvenile, and the adult system, including prisons and community corrections. This is just one example of a creative option at a local level where we are attempting to reduce multi-generational criminality. Full funding for community corrections allows us to invest in our local communities. In Klamath County, we spend just over $1 million in outside contracts. This investment provides us access to services, to service and sanction capacity. Services and sanction, combined with our supervision strategies, increases public safety. Co-Chair Winters and Stark, members of the committee, I ask you to fully fund community corrections baseline budget so that agencies like mine in Klamath County and 35 other counties across the state, rural and urban, can continue to do the jobs we are charged with doing. I thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today.
Thank you for your testimony.
Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm here to speak in support of full funding for community corrections. And as Kiki said, I am the director of the Community Mental Health Program in Klamath County, and I'm the Community Mental Health Director. I'm not really qualified
as such to speak about what the proposed cuts in the co-chair's budget would do to the operations of community corrections offices around the state. But I can tell you what we've done in Klamath County with the dollars that have been available. And I think what we can do is demonstrate a real successful model that has changed lives. It's well known that behavioral health factors such as substance abuse, childhood trauma, mental illness, and other factors are significant in contributing to criminal activity, and that an inability to overcome these risk factors contribute to high rates of recidivism. We also know that individuals with these risk factors who are also engaging in criminal activity rarely seek out behavioral health treatment on their own or voluntarily, even though research meta-analyses shows that behavioral health interventions designed to meet both psychiatric and criminal justice needs of offenders are clearly shown to produce significant reductions in psychiatric and criminal recidivism. Since we started our joint project with Klamath Community Corrections, we provided almost 16,000 co-occurring services to community corrections clients. Now, Klamath County is a rural-based county, as you know. We have about 67,000 citizens living in our area, so it's a highly rural population. 16,000 services over that time period is pretty significant. In 2016, we provided services to 987 corrections clients as part of probably about the 5,500 total consumers that we served in 2016. Now, these services are mandated by release agreements and supervision requirements imposed by community corrections. We have adopted the philosophy in our community, as I know has happened in other areas, that there should be no escape from treatment. I'm often surprised by the number of individuals coming out of prison who would prefer to go back rather than do treatment because they think treatment's going to be harder than doing time. But we don't let them get away with that. There's no escape from treatment. We conduct mental health and substance abuse assessments. Every client receives a standardized risk assessment. We develop person-centered service plans, and we work hard to engage these individuals in active treatment. We've endeavored to create an array of wraparound services that might include assistance with housing, employment, family counseling, parenting education, adult education, and other interventions that are well known to reduce recidivism. We've been able to blend funds from a variety of resources to support what we do. We've taken corrections funds. We've added some grant funding that we've brought in. And the Oregon Health Plan, through our local coordinated care organization, which is Cascade Health Alliance, have paid for services to these members. We have a process in which the first day that they return to the community, we check their eligibility for Oregon Health Plan, and we sign them up if they meet the criteria. Many of the corrections clients in this program have been offered 90-day transitional release from state institutions as well. And upon their return to the community, they are mandated into care. The resulting decrease in prison beds has both reduced pressure on state institutions and has created significant cost savings. Another outcome of this project is the reduction in probation and post-prison revocations. Our county has seen a reduction of approximately 35% in revocations in just the last 2 years as a result of these services. We've also seen numerous examples of individuals turning their lives around, achieving sobriety, recovering from psychiatric disorders, earning their GEDs, obtaining stable employment, assuming appropriate parental roles, and moving away from criminogenic behavior toward healthier pro-social lifestyles. I'm concerned that our project will be discontinued if the proposed funding cuts to the corrections budgets are implemented. We believe that we've demonstrated positive outcomes and cost savings, and I ask you to consider this as you struggle to address our budget challenges. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Any questions?
No. All right. Next up, we have Steve Berger and Monta Knudsen.
Good afternoon. Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee. My name is Steve Berger, and I'm president of the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I wish to relay the success of the state and local partnership created with Senate Bill 1145 during the 1995 legislative session. The community correction system that has evolved as a result of Senate Bill 1145 has two critical benefits to the state. First, our system improves public safety through local jurisdictions setting priorities to lower recidivism, which means fewer victims of crime in our communities. And second, we save taxpayers money, both through improved public safety outcomes and cost avoidance. Oregon's community correction system reduces our use of more expensive prison and jails, reserving prison for the most serious offenders while still keeping our communities safe. I know others will be testifying today and describe successful programs and personal stories to recovery. However, the pathway back to our communities is built upon the foundation of a strong partnership between the state and local community corrections programs. The governor's budget proposal triggers the opt-out and falls short of fully funding community corrections by cutting the legislatively approved funding model by 5%, which equates to $13.6 million. Such a reduction in funding will initiate two conversations. Which felony services will the legislature eliminate, and which counties will pursue the opt-out clause without a workload reduction? The opt-out clause allows counties to return responsibility for community corrections to the state if there's a failure by the state to fully fund the service, ending over two decades of a successful partnership. Our association asks you to consider the unintended consequences and costs associated with the funding reduction triggering opt-out discussions in counties across the state. The governor has convened a work group seeking proposals in response to the reductions within the public safety budgets, but at this time, our association believes it's too early in the legislative process to simply focus on any one workload reduction. Options such as reducing the prison population through innovative county pilots, alternative sentencing practices, and intensive community supervision have not been thoroughly vetted. Further, the savings DOC would incur from not needing to open OSP minimum, an estimated cost to $17 million, would more than cover the 5% reduction in funding and avoid the opt-out discussion altogether. In conclusion, now is the time Oregon needs a strong community corrections system, and I want to again emphasize the success of our Senate Bill 1145 partnership between the state and the county. We have a proven program, and investments in community corrections will improve public safety through effective programs impacting recidivism, reducing future victims, and fiscal savings through cost avoidance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Senator Winters and Representative Stark, members of the committee, and I want to thank you guys for the opportunity for me to come here today. My name is Monte Knutson. I'm the Executive Director of Bridges to Change and the President of Metro Plus Association of Addiction Peer Professionals. I'm here today to speak on the behalf of Bridges to Change and our partnerships with community corrections. Through House Bill 3194, known as Justice Reinvestment, Bridges to Change is a fundamental partner of community corrections that provides safe and stable housing, mentorship, access to services, employment services, stabilized planning for recently released individuals. The Department of Corrections enhanced their efforts during the last biennium targeting individuals eligible for short-term transitional leave. We currently provide those services for those eligible across five counties in the state of Oregon, along with the JRP programs that are also being provided at the same time. Successful transitioning from incarceration is not an easy task. The programs that we offer are set up to ease the burden of that transition, build trust with community corrections, and set the course for long-term success. One thing we provide are recovery mentors that meet with the mentee and the parole officer to set the course for the next 90 days. On the first day, the mentor takes the mentee out, they find their housing that is with us, they help them get engaged in treatment services, they help them access other vital services like SNAP benefits, bus passes, ID, and employment services. These are difficult systems to navigate after incarceration without assistance. And if you've ever tried to get an ID without a birth certificate, and a birth certificate without an ID, I encourage you to give it a shot.
Chicken and egg.
These types of reentry engagement, this type of reentry engagement removes barriers and tend to contribute to the frustration that ultimately also assists in recidivism. People often just give up. They get frustrated without the help that they need. One thing that all the counties that I work with have in common, although JRI is used a little bit differently in each place, we all work collaboratively together, and we all provide wraparound services through the parole officer, the clinician, the mentors, and the housing providers, and the employment specialists. It should be noted that in 2017, the CJC did a review and showed that the first and second year recidivism rates were lower. Specifically, second-year incarceration rates for the STTL group dropped 17.4% compared to the non-STTL group, and the second-year conviction rate also dropped 10%. In addition to that, the arrest rate dropped 4%. Investments in these programs have proven to impact recidivism and create savings through cost avoidance, which is a huge contributor to our state's return on investment. I can use myself as an example. I spent 16 years in active addiction. 10 years of those 16, I was incarcerated. I paroled 4 times. On the 4th time I paroled, I was lucky enough to enter into a reentry program in Washington County. Through that program, I accessed services similar to what I just described. Today, I have 14 years clean. I've been employed full-time since 2007. Looking at my history, had I not found this reentry program, I most likely would have spent the majority of the last 14 years incarcerated based on my history. So what was the return on investment for me during that era through that reentry program? In closing, we hire previously incarcerated individuals who work for us. In fact, some of our first STTL clients and our JRP clients currently now work for me at Bridges the Change. In addition to that, they work with the POs who once supervised them, which is a huge deal. Out of my 89 employees, 87 of them are in recovery and have navigated successfully out of the criminal justice system. Many of these folks have been through very similar vital programs. This morning, I calculated over 230 years of combined clean time and recovery, which is a huge savings through cost avoidance. In addition, my recovery staff, since this was brought up earlier, have paid their fair share of taxes. Those who were once involved in the criminal justice system, just in the last year through my payroll, and we've been in existence since 2004, my previously incarcerated staff have paid over $700,000 in the last 12 months in federal and state taxes. Investing in these programs that contribute to avoid future costs is, in my opinion, the criminal justice reform that we need to continue to fund. I wish you well on the tough decisions ahead of you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Any questions for these two? All right, thank you. Next up, we have Joseph Teitz and Shannon Tuller. Or Cheyenne, sorry. And I will be right back.
Please go ahead and just remember to identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Co-Chair Stark and Co-Chair Winters, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Joseph Teitz. I'm a clinical psychologist and executive director of Pathfinders of Oregon. I'm here to testify in support of continued funding for DOC and criminal and community corrections. We've been in partnership with the Department of Correction in Oregon for over 23 years, and during that time, over 20,000 adults in custody have received services through our programs, including 5,000 women. We also run the LIFT program, which is Living in Freedom Today program at the Women's Prison in Coffee Creek, which is alcohol and drug treatment, as well as cognitive restructuring. In addition to the programs we run in the Department of Corrections, we also run the Center for Family Success based in Multnomah County, where we work with the families of people who have been incarcerated. Often left out of the discussion or awareness are the thousands of children who are impacted by a parent's incarceration. The vast majority of people in prisons are parents, and little thought is given to the impact of working with those children to prevent a second generation. Secondarily, research has shown that engaging children and families with incarcerated individuals reduces the rate of recidivism significantly. We deliver a number of programs through DOC, a Journey to Change program, which is a 195-hour cognitive restructuring and pro-social skill-building program, Parenting Inside Out, which is an evidence-based program that we also sell and work with 27 other states, delivering that program to parents in prison. And we also work in the Intensive Management Unit Challenge program, which is essentially segregation, trying to make those programs a little bit more responsive. We do that by bringing in best practice. We've partnered quite a bit with Department of Corrections, and as you've heard, they're very collaborative, and particularly working with Heidi Stewart to bring in best practice approaches, gender-specific programming, trauma-informed programming, and evidence-based programming. So Oregon has a reputation nationally, and we happen to know this because we work in 27 states, as being one of the more progressive Department of Corrections, and we'd like to see that continue, and we'd like to see that funding remain the same so that we can continue that partnership and build those innovative programs. Thank you.
Co-chairs Winters and Stark and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on the proposed cut to the Launder Learning Center in Multnomah County's Department of Community Justice. My name is Cheyenne Teller, and I'm a member of Aspen Local 88, representing the basic skills educator classification in Multnomah County. So I'm an instructor at Launder Learning Center, and we are a re-entry program in Portland, providing ex-offenders with GED instruction, job skills, computer skills, pre-apprenticeship help, and basic life skills. And we tell our students to turn their cell phones off during class.
Sorry.
I was going to get us dancing.
Just so you know.
It was my daughter. Sorry.
Just to warn you, I one time had a cell phone go off while I was preaching, and I went out and answered it for them.
So. Oh. There we go.
Well, you see, I shut it
on the mic. It was good. Sorry. Continue.
So, yeah, I feel right at home. It's like I'm in class right now. So our program is proposed to be cut at the end of this fiscal year. We serve approximately 500 people per year, and we feel that this cut would guarantee that adults in reentry without a high school diploma would remain unemployed and dependent on government assistance, and that it would negatively affect the recidivism rate in Multnomah County. And while it is true that there are other education and employment agencies in Portland, they are cost prohibitive and or they only serve certain ages and ability levels. Oregon has the third worst high school graduation rate in the nation, and in Portland, people of color are more likely to drop out of school and to be incarcerated. And as you know, this lack of access of education has devastating effects on our county. Launder Learning Center breaks the school-to-prison pipeline. Sadly, there have been reductions to education programs for adults in Multnomah County Jail. And all other local GED programs in Portland present barriers such as age limitations, cost, or delayed entry. Unlike other programs, Launder's flexibility allows students to concurrently participate in supervision, treatment, and education. We ensure that those who have paid their debt to society get a chance to become productive citizens. We also help students enter apprenticeship programs and transition to community colleges. Attorney John Ryan and presiding Judge Donald Launder founded Launder Learning Center in 1993. Since then, it has helped thousands get an education, get a job, and stay out of jail. Thank you for your support.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for these two? All right. Thank you. Next up, Kevin Neely and Joseph Hernandez. Jeff Hernandez. Can't read today.
No,
I'm sorry,
no
Jeff.
Problem. I just want to make sure there wasn't
another one. No. It was clear if I actually looked at it.
You want to go?
No, go ahead.
All right.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Stark and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Neely, and I represent the Oregon District Attorneys Association. On behalf of the ODAA, I express my support for the Department of Corrections budget. I thank Colette and her staff for their exemplary work in running a complex and expansive department. The Department of Corrections is a critical piece of Oregon's public safety system. Each of its components, operations, offender management, rehabilitation, and community corrections, plays a valuable role in reducing crime in our communities. Earlier today, I submitted to the committee a report that was completed by ODAA in January of this year. That report takes a comprehensive look at Oregon's criminal justice system over the last 35 years. I encourage you to take a look at it. It's on OLIS. Overall, the report highlights the incredible success of Oregon's public safety system over the last four decades. Perhaps more than any other area of government, our public safety system has delivered a remarkable return on investment. We are a different state today than we were in the 1980s. Oregon has gone from a state that was among the nation's most violent to among the states the nation's least violent. A big part of that success is attributable to investments in Oregon Department of Corrections. In the late 80s, there were virtually no prison beds available for violent offenders. As a result, they frequently served a fraction of their sentence before overcrowding led to early release. In the report, you will find some telling graphs that show the steep decline in the number of available prison beds on a per felony basis between the 1960s and the 1980s. In the late 80s and early 90s, the legislature began investing in corrections. That shift, combined with important sentencing changes, coincided with a dramatic reduction in violent crime. Oregon became and remains a much safer place to live. The ODAA believes that increased incapacitation of violent felons played an important role in reducing victimization and reducing our violent crime rate by over 50% during that period of time. For this reason, ODAA supports continued investments in the general operations of DOC. Over the past few years, the prison population forecasts have largely leveled off and are now projected to grow below the rate of Oregon's general population. That's great news. Hopefully, Oregon is able to maintain public safety with lower rates of incarceration. Because crime is low and the personal and financial costs of incarceration are high, we must look at diversifying our public safety investments in ways that help curb criminal behavior before it starts and reduce recidivism among offenders already involved in the criminal justice system. We have long known that incarceration is not the right approach for most offenders. And in that spirit, Oregon has always had one of the lowest incarceration rates for drug crimes. For that reason, it is important that individuals that are not incapacitated receive treatment to ensure they change their behavior before it escalates. This work is often a collaborative effort between community corrections offices, prosecutors, and local treatment providers, many of whom are gathered here today. And much of it is funded, as you know, through DOC's Community Corrections Division. Cuts to this budget, especially if they are compounded by reductions to justice reinvestment or specialty courts, will imperil these efforts. As a result, they will most certainly mean that offenders who would have previously been rehabilitated instead will be incarcerated. That's a step, as you guys know, in the wrong direction. The members of ODAA strongly support the ongoing operational budget of DOC and an appropriation level that protects to every extent possible the important resources of the community corrections system. I really appreciate your time, and again, thank Colette and the work she's done at the Department of Corrections.
Thank you, Kevin. Jeff?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Stark, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. My name is Jeffrey Hernandez. I'm a sergeant at Oregon State Penitentiary for the Oregon Department of Corrections. I am the Executive Vice President of Security for the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees. We represent approximately 850 corrections employees members around the state in all institutions, mine specifically in four, as well as OC Enterprises. I'm not here to give you numbers. I'm here to testify about what this department does for its members, for staff members, and for the people that are incarcerated. I want to thank Deputy Director Peters sincerely for her efforts, and as a member of the labor organization AOC, we are fully behind her in the way she is guiding this department. She has enacted, taking the money that has been delegated by this committee and by the legislature into her care, and she is putting into programs that are progressive and very responsive to the needs of the inmate community. We see this in the changes in our mental health, mentally ill inmate treatment. In the behavioral health unit and the mental health infirmary. I'm sure those are areas that are familiar to all of you. I happen to work in that building. I see it every day as we find new and better ways to approach people. We have people that for years have been incarcerated in very small confines that, thanks to the direction this department is going, the people that are working in it are now acting as orderlies in institutions where before they weren't able to be around another human person. This is incredible. These are changes that are fundamental to the way that we do business, and it would not be possible if we did not have the resources available to us to provide these. A lot of that comes in the form of our staff members. We constantly lose senior and respected staff members because of burnout, because of shortages, any number of reasons. We lose qualified nurses and medical staff. We lose qualified mental health professionals. We lose security COs from burnout, from having to work mandatories because we don't have the funding to hire more people, because we don't have competitive rates in certain areas of the states, things along those lines. These are all things that are not to blame on the department or to blame on the legislature, but it's something that affects us every single day inside the institutions. And again, I thank Deputy Director Peters sincerely for her wellness programs and for the programs she uses to maintain our staff and keep us here and make sure we have the resources to go and treat the inmate population to the very best of our abilities. And the continued funding of the department's budget is essential to that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Thank you. Did you guys notice? Oh, go ahead, Senator Frederick.
Yes, I just want to I want to make sure that we understand that there are some folks who are not particularly pleased with the increased numbers of folks going into prison, and that they're, and especially the disproportionate the disproportionality of those of the demographics of those folks coming in, and so I just want to make sure that that's in the mind as we talk about these issues. Just finished seeing an interesting Netflix report, a documentary called 13th. I would encourage you to see it because it does speak to some of the concerns that an awful lot of folks have about this. So I just wanted to insert that because I appreciate the great effort that has taken place. But as I look around, I see too many of my constituents who have gone through that system, and I'd like to not make sure that they're not, that we don't disrupt the communities that I represent by way of that system. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anybody else here for public testimony that I missed? All right. Well, on that note, Mr. Ball, will you come on up and give us the CFO presentation? Did you guys notice that almost everybody who testified thanked Director Peters? Well done. Almost everybody who testified thanked you. Some of them multiple times.
And I thank them.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dustin Ball, and I'm with the Chief Financial Office. I understand it is late in the afternoon. I will keep this presentation brief. I'll move through it. If there's any questions as I go through, please feel free to stop me, and we can dive in a little bit deeper. As you have heard from Director Peters and her team over the last several days, the department is tasked with managing felony offenders. Let me move this. Felony offenders that are incarcerated by the courts for more than 12 months. They operate 14 active institutions, which include health services and treatment and training programs to assist in the transition from prison back into the community. They also provide pass-through funding for community corrections, and they operate community corrections in Linn and Douglas counties. Issues DOC is facing in the upcoming biennium are looking at the prison population trends, continuing the staff wellness initiatives, and providing adequate care for its population with severe mental illness. And this is through the Behavioral Health Unit at the Oregon State Penitentiary. Governor's priorities in this budget, as with other public safety agencies, is to balance law enforcement, accountability, and treatment options in an effort to reduce recidivism. On the far left in this slide, you will see the actual expenditures from the 13-15 biennium. The middle column is the legislatively adopted budget for the 15-17 biennium, and the far right is the governor's proposed budget for 17-19. And what you'll see is a fairly steady growth in DOC's budget over this time frame. What I want to call out on this slide is 58% of the agency's overall budget is related to people. This is the agency staff that manage and operate the 24/7 facilities, those 14 active institutions around the state. When we look at the medical services and supplies, a couple of the main drivers in that category are the medical services and supplies, and then treatment and training programs are embedded in there. And then when you look at the special payments, the vast majority of the special payments are providing funding to the community correction programs throughout the state. Key investments included in the governor's budget are providing funding to open the Oregon State Penitentiary minimum facility to accommodate anticipated growth in the female population. This was based on the October forecast and the prison population trends at the time that the budget was developed. We are providing staff and resources for the behavioral health unit. This is to provide those resources to the severe mentally ill population within DOC's care and custody. We are also providing general funding to some general fund to replace a portion of lost other funds revenue, and this is associated with an anticipated loss in site commissions with a telecommunications contract. Cost-saving measures included in the budget. There's a bill, it's House Bill 2238, that was supported by the governor. This would reduce the possession of controlled substance from a felony to a misdemeanor charge for crime category classifications of 5 or less. We eliminated inflationary growth within DOC, and we reduced grant and aid funding by 5% below current service level. This is the piece that would enable opt-out by county community correction programs. And we also included DAS statewide adjustments that include DAS price list, state government service charges, as well as adjustments to the Attorney General's rate. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to address those.
Any questions? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else for the good of the order? On that note, we will close our public hearing and we will adjourn. Thank you.